Zhao, who will be speaking on environmental legal state funding distribution.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for attending the talk. My name is Yi, and this work is collaborated with Dr. Qi, Mr. Ma, and Professor Lo, my supervisor, as well as Professor Qian. We are from the University of Toronto in CQIQC. These are our funding providers. Here's the outline. First, I will give a brief introduction of what the fund key distribution. I think all of you know that, so I'll do really quickly. And since this is an experimental talk, I'll say a few words about typical setups, what kind of setups normally we use to do fund key distribution. And then we came to why do we need a DQSA, what's wrong with current setups. And then to the essential of this talk, our work, the experimental implementations. We implemented two protocols, one DQI protocol and the weak vacuum protocol. And as another crucial part of our work, I will discuss the numerical simulation. Why do we need it? And how did we perform it? Finally, I will say something about recent works and experimental DQI state studies and a summary of the talk. First, the introduction. The one-time pad. How many of you know what is one-time pad? If so, I will just skip it. Great. So, and with one-time pad, we get the key distribution problem. So I guess you all know that. And classically, key distribution problem is impossible to solve because we can always copy the key. So now, what's quantum? Why do we need quantum key distribution? Intuitively, the quantum cloning theorem, least proper cannot for the copies. I guess you all know this. Let's go quickly. And then people propose BBD4 protocol, which is the most famous one. Anyone who knows BBD4 protocol? Great. Let's skip it. Okay. Now let's go to the typical setups. And BBD4 protocol, the original BBD4 protocol is polarization encoding based. So this is a conceptual setup of BBD4 protocol. And in which all of us will randomly choose one of the laser diodes. Each laser diode will generate, this one generates horizontal polarization. This is vertical polarization, this is 45 degree, and this is 135 degree. And make a random choice by the fifth layer, so we send a photon with random polarization from the four, and transmit, transmit through the quantum channel, and enters Bob. And Bob used this fifth layer to make a random choice as a basis, vertical horizontal basis or diagonal basis. And then use this PBS, this polarizing fifth layer, to perform the measurement. And the single photon detector will tell us what it is. So this is a conceptual setup of polarization encoding QKD. Experimentally, how do we do it? So this picture perfectly matches the previous one. So people then use four laser diodes here, and through polarizing base layer and the base layer here, so it's random choosing one of the polarization, and goes through some. Actually, in this experiment, these parts are all in free space, so they need a lens to couple it to fiber. And go through the base layer. The purpose of this one is to measure the intensity of the laser. Then go through the optical fiber and enter this part. Use this lens to collimate the laser from fiber to back to free space in. Then use this to make measurements. Normally, in QKD, we use optical fibers as one channel. That's simply because we have optical fiber network laid down already, so it's a very cheap resource we can utilize. Well, the disadvantage for polarization coding QKD is the fiber has fibrous regions, so when you input certain polarized light here, the output polarization is unpredictable. It will certainly be different from the input polarization. And the output it's not only unpredictable, but also for the change of the output is also unpredictable, because the fiber is often disturbed somehow, like someone may walk beside it, some truck may just run over it, or some subway just beside it, or so. So the output correlation is unpredictable, therefore we really need to compensate this correlation change. Well, in this work, I think they only used some, let's see here, I think it's a polarization controller. So they are like compensating the polarization statically. So if the channel doesn't change, so if we put the fiber loop in a well-sealed box, it's okay. But in actual situation, normally this one, the polarization of the polarization change introduced by a few fibers changes frequently, as I mentioned before. So such static polarization compensation is not sufficient. Therefore, probably we need active polarization compensation. Well, someone did it. Conceptually, it's Alice generates one of the four polarization states sent through the fiber, then use this elastic polarization controller to compensate the polarization change induced by the fiber. So this is to compensate the polarization change of HV base, horizontal vertical base, and this one is to compensate the diagonal base. And they did the experiment here, and got some successful results. Well, it seems to be working, but there are some disadvantages though, because you can see, in principle, we need 8 single-frequency detectors. It's really expensive to implement this. Actually, in their experiment, they only chose one basis. They only chose vertical horizontal base. And because this is just demonstration, in principle, if we can do it in this basis, we should be able to do the whole experiment. So it's very expensive. Also, the polarization compensating part is fairly slow. I don't think it can reach megahertz actually. And I think in their paper they said normally the polarization compensating process would take up to 3 minutes. And that means if the fiber is pretty short and pretty stable, it's okay. Like you perform PVD for maybe 10 minutes, maybe compensate for 3 minutes. But when the distance gets longer and longer, you might be compensating more and more frequent. And as a loss, maybe you just generate a key for 10 seconds and you spend 3 minutes to recalibrate the polarization compensation, then do 10 seconds for key distribution. It's very inefficient to do so. But its advantage is it's not from action. So the change of length of fiber, it's not a big problem in this case. You don't need to interfere with signals. Well, people propose an alternative choice, the phase coding. Well, the phase coding is, so well analyzed polarization coding. In polarization coding, we say, okay, horizontal polarization or vertical polarization. And in phase coding, we say, okay, the phase is delayed by 0, pi, or pi over 2, or 3 pi over 2. Well, the advantage of phase coding is that it can be very easily implemented with single-mode fiber components. Because the phase modulation, the interferometers can be very easily constructed using single-mode fiber components. And more importantly, in this set, you can see the signals are traveling through the thick fiber. Okay. The laser is generated here, then travels through two arms, so it's loaded with two laser pulses. Then these two pulses is traveling through the same fiber. Therefore, the polarization chain of these two laser pulses is identical. So, of course, you still need some polarization control, but it's only locally, because in this part, you have to make the polarization changes introduced by these two arms are identical. But it's only local polarization control, and it's way easier to implement compared to, to compensating the polarization changes the whole channel. That's the advantage of this scheme. But the disadvantage is you have to keep the two interferometers identical. Because you want to see the phase change, you want to see the phase difference of the two pulses, so you have to interfere with it. And that means you have to make the two interferometers variance until the mismatch of the two interferometers should be within a fraction of wavelength, which means actually very, very stable, the length of the interferometer. And here is a famous work done by the partial Europe group. So they implemented the active lens compensation by introducing a reference detector. So they use this one to measure whether or not the two interferometers are identical. Then they use this fiber stretcher to make sure that to compensate the lens strength due to thermal fluctuation. However, we still need the polarization control to make the two interferometer introduce the same polarization change. More importantly, actually, in their implementation, they need even more polarization control because they use polarization beam splitter here. So the scheme of their work is the laser generated here, and then flooded by this interferometer. Then the laser will go through this polarization beam splitter. Therefore, the two pulses has orthogonal polarization. Then they enter here, go to this polarization beam splitter, and should be the one travel through the long arm here to travel through the short arm here. The one travel through the short arm here to go through the long arm here. And to implement this, there should be a polarization control here to make sure the polarization chain induced by the whole channel can compensate it. Well, this is a big drawback. Because again, you have to compensate the polarization chain introduced by the whole channel. But sometime later, people discovered another structure, the Faraday Michelson system. In this system, we can clearly see that we do not need any polarization control, neither globally nor locally. This is because by introducing these thread mirrors, the laser is going through the same channel back and forth twice. So the polarization change induced by the channel is well compensated. So this is a very smart design, as published in Optics Errors. And in this way, we do not need any polarization control. However, still, we need the lens compensation. We need to compensate the lens strength due to thermal fluctuation, which is the common problem for unidirectional phase code in QPD. Well, then people say, OK, let's see if we can do something else. Let's prepare about the Geneva group. And let me explain it step by step. First, Bob generates, let me go to this slide. Bob generates some light here. Floated by the beam splitter, go through the interferometer. Therefore, at this stage, there are two laser pulses. Then the laser enters ALIS, and then ALIS will modulate the phase, the phase of one of the pulses. Therefore, changing the relative phase of the two pulses. And then the signal is reflected by the fresh mirror and goes through the same fiber. And then the two pulses would interfere through the same interferometer. In this way, the polarization chain induced by the fibers, as well as the thermal drift in this interferometer, are both negligible. So it's kind of also common sense. In this way, we can easily achieve much lower error rate and much higher repetition, not much higher repetition, but much lower error rate and much less calibration work. And in our work, we choose this scheme, the flying phase scheme, simply because it's very stable. It can provide pretty high performance. So this is a fun play. So finally, why do we need PQI states? What's wrong with the current system? The practical QPD setups are imperfect. They're not as good as people assume in their proofs. For one thing, normally people assume, okay, we use single photon source. However, in practice, people use attenuated laser as source. And attenuated lasers will generate coherent states, which with randomized phase. And the Fermi number distribution for such states obeys Poisson distribution. And this means, occasionally, the laser source will generate multi-photon signals. And also the channel is lossy and noisy. Well, the boundary further signal is an easy cure for BBT4 problem because it always generates a multi-filter signal with identical information. The eavesdropper can simply split this to keep it copy and send a rest file. In this way, the eavesdropper has an identical copy of whatever file acts. And the security is definitely present. A specific attack is called the further number floating attack, in which first is the eavesdropper measure having filtered the signal. If it's vacuum, it's nothing, so the eavesdropper won't do anything. Nobody will get information anyway. And if it has once filtered, the eavesdropper will say, I can't eavesdrop because I cannot film this, so it just blocks. And if the eavesdropper found a case that has more than one filter, she will simply split it, keep a copy, and make sure Bob gets a rest. So as a readout, this server has an identical copy of whatever Bob has. And the key point is, because there's channel loss, although the single photons are blocked, Bob may simply think, okay, these photons are lost in the channel. And this server can also compensate this part by make sure Bob can get the multi-photon states. In this way, can somehow fool Bob and launch the eavesdropping attack. Previously, there are two approaches. First, people were struggling to build a single photon source in many ways. But it turns, if you want to make a perfect single photon source, if you want to make sure that your source does not generate multi-photon at all, that's pretty challenging. And also, it's not very practical, especially comparing to coherent laser sources. Another approach is we can do careful security analysis to privacy amplification. So we can estimate actually how many information is secure. So these software can obtain some, but there must be a limit of the amount of information linked to these software. If we can get more than that, then we can still extract the key by running hashing mode. First of all, I think the very intuitive explanation is that so Alice has to assume that all the multi-photon signal generated by her is received by Bob, then they are all insecure. But if actually Bob got more than that, then the rest must be single photon signals. And those signals should be secure in principle. So the main task is to ask me how many such single photon signals reaches Bob, and how can we extract them. By careful analysis, we found that in this way, we can make such imperfect setups unconditionally secure. However, the price is pretty high, because we found that by making the very cautious privacy application, the key generation is really low. It's pretty low, and the transmission distance is pretty short. So it's not a very satisfactory situation. To surprise, people discovered the Bitcoin state. So what's the basic idea? In Bitcoin state, okay, in conventional QKD, we send all the signals with the same average photon number. But in Bitcoin state, we send them in different average photon numbers. Okay. Some state are called signal state. There's average photon numbers in mu. And some other states with average photon numbers mu 1, mu 2, mu 3, et cetera, et cetera. And then we blend them randomly instead of Bob. Well, these numbers still can measure the photon number in the channel. But once you get the photon number, say, 0 is 1 is 2 or whatever, she has no clue if it's from a signal state or from a decoy state, because by performing measurement, she's making a projection from the superposition of the number states to one of them. And this projection is irreversible. So she cannot tell what's the average photon number of this signal. She can only tell what's the photon number of the signal. So it cannot distinguish these states. But by the end of the key distribution, Alice can tell this to Bob, and then they can calculate the gains and cures of different states. And with this information, we can find the lower band of key generation rates. And theoretical study predicts a dramatic performance improvement. this idea is first proposed by Huang, and then Low has developed this further in ISIT and the PIL papers. So now, let's go to what we have done experimentally first. First, how do we implement the decoy state? Firstly, Alice would modulate the enhanced eval protein signal to be either decoy or signal, then send it to Bob. And Bob says, OK, I got him. And now they say, OK, this bit is decoy, that bit is a signal, that bit is a signal, that bit is decoy. Then Bob can find out the gains and keywords of different states. Then Alice and Bob could estimate the maximum secure key generation rate. We need specific protocols to perform decoy state QKD. We proposed three protocols. The first one is called one decoy protocol, in which we need only one decoy state. So when Alice is sending out a signal, it's either the signal state or the decoy state, only two level intensities. This is apparently the easiest decoy state protocol, but it's not so efficient as the latter one, the weak but vacuum problem. The weak but vacuum problem is a little bit more complicated, as it has three states. It has two decoy states and one signal state. So it's like three-level casting. And by saying weak but vacuum, actually, one of the decoy states is still the vacuum, so the filter should be blocked. And another called weak because it should be weaker than the signal state. Well, numerical simulation shows this protocol is optimal in the asymptotic case. How can we interpret it? How can we understand this? By saying optimal, that means weak but vacuum protocol can give the same performance compared to the situation where we have infinite many decoy states. And by saying asymptotic case, we say, OK, the delta size is infinite long, so we do not have to consider the statistical fluctuation. Another one, the third one, is general two decoy protocol. This one also has two decoy states, but it's different from the weak but vacuum protocol because neither of the decoy states is necessary to be vacuum. This protocol has some practical meaning because in practice, sometimes it's not easy to achieve the real vacuum state because we have finite distinction ratio of attenuator. So we prepared this project in the publication of PRA, and also some other people have decent research work on this topic. As I said, we need an active modulator to do decoy state. We have to modulate the intensities. So how should we choose it? Can we simply get any? The answer is no, because for our system is plug and play, as shown in this picture. And the system is working at 5 megahertz. So at least the active modulator should be able to work at 5 megahertz. It sounds to be pretty low speed, but combining with the second criteria, the modulation should be quite exhaustive. Then it's not that easy. Why do we need the active modulation to be quite exhaustive? This is because, as you can see, the laser pulse comes from generally from far. And go through the whole channel and enters out. The polarization of laser here, the frame balance, is totally unpredictable, and it's changing all the time. To achieve the decoy state, to modulate the amplitude, we need the output intensity to be accurate regardless of the incoming polarization. Therefore, this amplitude modulation should be polarization exhaustive. Well, the ordinary amplitude modulator, like the electro-optical amplitude modulator, they're polarization sensitive. They can only modulate the intensity of one polarizing component and block the other. So they cannot be used for this purpose. What can we choose? We chose the acoustic-optic modulator. Here is a schematic of the principle of this modulator. The principle is as follows. Here, there's a piezoelectric, and it generates the acoustic wave. This acoustic wave would make this crystal somewhere is denser than somewhere else, which in turn creates periodical refractive index change. And this refractive index change would be forming a grating. So we can diffract the light. Okay. And we know if we change the intensity of the acoustic wave, we are actually changing the change of refractive index. For example, if we do not include this acoustic wave, there will be no refractive change. And in that case, the light will just propagate through it, and there will be no first order diffraction at all. Normally, we take first order diffraction as a PKF. We want that light, we want that beam. So if there's no acoustic wave, there's no first order diffraction, then we have full distinction. And when we start to generate the acoustic wave, there should be gradually sunlight outcoming from this angle. And when we increase the amplitude of this acoustic wave, the intensity of the beam in this direction will be stronger and stronger. So in this way, we can modulate the intensity of the laser. And this modulation is practically exhaustive. And it can be done within a few megahertz. So we chose this component, the acoustic optimodulator, to as the active modulator in our experiment. However, it has a potential problem. That is, when the light is got as incident in the crystal and get diffracted, somehow we can understand like the photon is interacting with the phonon, because the acoustic wave can be understood as phonon. And it will absorb the phonon and get diffracted, get it absorb the momentum of the phonon. And in this way, the output photon has higher energy than before, which means its frequency has been shifted. This frequency shift, or can understand as Doppler. And it will cause some problem. I will talk about this later.
Sorry, but isn't it only the forward ones that you're interested in?
Well, this is not exactly what we are using. No, what we are using is like the light is coming this way.
Okay.
Coming this way. And first order diffraction in that way.
Okay.
And we will pick out this beam because this beam cannot be totally distinguished. Right? It's always this beam, so it's not a very good choice. So we choose this the first order diffraction. So how do we implement the 1D quite properly? Here's a schematic of our setup. This is we implemented this over a quantum plate system and as a first equal state QPD experiment. Well, we applied AOM in our experiment, which is the first application of AOM in QPD to our observation. In our experiment, we chose intensity or the average photon number of signal states to be 0.8 and the average photon number of decoy state to be 0.12. So how did we do it? First, Bob would generate laser from the laser diode. And then the laser pulse would be floated by the refractor, control through the channel and enters Alice. And then Alice would encode her information by modulating the phase through her phase modulator, so she modulates the relative phase of the two pulses. Meanwhile, you can see there's a photodiode here. So when the pulse enters Alice, this photodiode got a fraction of light because of the photodiode. The photodiode got a detection. Say, okay, there's the pulse coming. And we'll tell the decoy generator, which is used to attend the laser, say, okay, get ready. And after a while, when the light is going from, exiting from Alice, this generator will drive the AOM to modulate the intensity of each pass dynamically. So each pass is modulated differently. And then the laser pass goes through the same channel, and there's Bob in the front here, and Bob decodes them. So first Bob chose his measurement basis by his phase modulator. and then let the two passes interfere at a fixed layer and see which way it goes. After that, after Bob got all the other detections, Bob would analyze would say the basis of each signal as well as the state of each signal, if it's a signal or a peak point. With this information, Bob would be able to compute the gains and qubits of all the states and then calculate the key rate and do the price amplification. Here is a realization of peak point. The upper chart is the modulation body. This is a snapshot from our oscilloscope. This is modulation voltage, and here is the corresponding laser intensity. The bottom is the corresponding state. So this is the real section of the peak point profile, the distribution of the peak point states. So this state is signal, you can see it's at this level, signal, signal, peak point, peak point. Signal, 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 peak point, signal. It's a random pattern. And you can see each pulse is, each signal is represented by two pulses, as I said before, because they're floated by the interferometer. I want to remark that in actual experiments, the light is way weaker than this. Okay, this is just for visualization, and we use very strong laser pulse, so you can see, okay, this is stronger than that. But in actual experiment, they're in single photon level. You cannot observe it for sure. So this is a peak point. And we did the experiment. Here is a picture of our setup. Here's Bob, here's Alice. All these are Alice. Here's Alice Bob. That's the package. And so these are from Bob to Alice, get out from Alice, and get modulated by this peak point, AOM. So this one is used to modulate intensity and goes back to Bob. This is the whole picture. Our experiment is done over 15 kilometers of optical fiber, and the key rate is a quarter of the Rayleigh limit. So it's pretty. That means we introduce only one peak point state, and we already achieved a quarter of the case infinite many peak point states in infinite long distance. Oh, by the way, we send 100 megabits in our experiment. Now I will talk about the frequency shift. Why it matters? The frequency shift caused by this AOM, the decoy AOM, will result in a phase shift in the interferometer because although the interferometer of the lens doesn't change, but the frequency of light changes. So now the pulses travel through the same length and has different phase shifts. And that's, as a result, we observe very high error rates. Because now the phase difference between the two pulses is totally mixed up. Well, what can we do? Our first solution is we put another AOM here, we call compensating AOM, and it's driven by another functional generator, which can generate, so we can change the frequency of this AOM. By changing the frequency of this AOM, we want to make sure the total phase change caused by the two AOMs to be multiples of two pi. And in this way, we have resolved the interfering fringes. And we went back to very low error rate case. So this is our first solution, and which we used in our first experiment. However, it seems a bit redundant because we got two AOMs here. It's a bit weird. So can we remove it? The answer is, of course, yes. And we remove it in our next experiment. So in next experiment, we applied weak fast vacuum propagation because we know it's more powerful. The setup is pretty similar, it's just also laser generated by Bob going to Alice and reflect back, and the intensity is modulated by the AOM. The difference is, now in this AOM, we calibrated this frequency to make sure the phase drift caused by this AOM in the interferometer is multiples of 2 pi. In other words, this is AOM is somehow self-compensating. So we need only one AOM. And the error rate is still pretty low, and we can do the whole experiment. This experiment is done over 60 times your fiber, and the skew key rate is in the order of 2 to minus 5. This work is published in Proceedings of ISFT. So now let's move on to somehow a little bit the regular part than the vertical simulator.
Sorry, can I just ask a troubled really stupid question? Mm-hmm. If you just drive the AOM at a fixed frequency, mm-hmm. but change the intensity at which you're driving it, won't you change the efficiency of the diffraction but keep the frequency shift constant?
Right, right. The frequency shift is constant. That's true.
So what was the problem in the previous version?
Oh, that's because previous this AOM we're using is a rather high frequency. And we do not have a tunable driver to change frequency at that level. So, okay, let me go back. In this way, this one is about 100 megahertz. If we want to change its frequency, we need a fastener generator which can work at 100 megahertz.
Mm-hmm. Why would you change its frequency? That I thought was the problem that was giving you the
because if we do not change the frequency in the first place, the frequency shift caused by the AOM will result in a very high Q right here.
You could try to like double bus enable once to do that loop, and then you go back. But because normally if you say the same frequency, now the interferometer is set up for analysis. But you're coming back, come at a different frequency.
Yeah.
So that means on the way back, it's a different frequency. Basically, the patterns must have been shifted.
Okay.
By a fixed amount.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And then you can repair it if you set the patient to the 2π, then it fits again once you come back.
So the AOM originally was in the wrong frequency, basically. So we have to pick all that frequency.
Yeah, but it's there to modulate the intensities of these pulses, essentially. By just changing is that not a possible thing to change the intensity of the driving frequency?
That's what's done. But any it's the auto compensation is not true anymore, right? You need to vary 5B while the pulse is traveling.
The auto compensation for the polarization still works, but not for the phase.
Yeah. I have another question. Do you have used a standing wave AOM?
I think a traveling wave.
But could you have, if you had used a standing wave AOM, it doesn't display a frequency shift?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Is there some other technical problem with standing wave AOMs?
I don't know. I'm not sure if standing wave AOM can go to. That's the only concern I have.
That's for sure.
Because I think when we are choosing the AOM, that's almost the fastest we can find at the time. It can work at 20 megahertz.
One of the problems I can imagine is that a standing wave AOM usually is more resonant. You cannot modulate it as far from its natural frequency.
Okay.
As a traveling wave, because there you have an absorber, so basically it doesn't matter mm-hmm. what it faces. Whereas in a standing wave AOM, you have a reflection at the other end, where actually it's taking the second phase on.
Right.
And you can only drive it at the frequency. Because if you're.
Yeah, if you're off resonance,
you don't get a lot.
No, otherwise, yeah, exactly. Otherwise, you don't get a standing wave and you get really bad. The electrical power that you put in will just come back out.
But
if I put an antenna that's exactly a certain length, that has a high VSVR, then if you drive it at the wrong frequency, you basically crash it up with fire at the other end.
Yeah, but one frequency is fine, isn't it?
One frequency is fine, except that if you want to randomly modulate it, obviously you introduce side bands. Let's see, a certain bandwidth to it.
But do you modulate the intensity?
No,
yes.
Set or the frequency?
We modulate the intensity. But I think if you change it from time to time, it's maybe somehow you introduce another frequency.
Yeah. You could amplitude make modulation on it. But what is the average? So that's actually a question I have for. What's the average frequency of your random intensity modulation?
5 megahertz.
That's the average frequency.
That actually that's a rotation rate of the ion, so that's the frequency must be set.
So the frequency is probably then. Something like 2.5, some geometric series. If it's white noise between, like if at every cycle you decide on one of the states, then you will get some average frequency, right? Which mm-hmm. you can calculate basically as some kind of average of all frequencies, which is 0.5 megahertz and then all the subharmonics in the way. Well, doesn't matter. That's important.
Other question?
Yes.
So could you use the same modulator going both directions? So when it arrives in Alice, you modulate once and then use it again when it's leaving Alice?
Sorry, I don't know if you can.
So instead of. So the current picture, the one you have up now, you then the two modulators.
Right.
And they're both, when it comes out, it goes through both of those modulators.
Right.
So could you instead have just used the same one, but once when it comes into Alice and once when it leaves out?
So you say just use one AOM and
yeah.
Go back and forth twice?
Yeah.
That, of course, I think that's you just said that we use one AOM.
No, I understand that. But OK, so there's a related question, which is given that you now need to keep that frequency synced with the interferometer, if there's some
right.
issue, you have to adjust the interferometer to make sure it stays.
No, not necessarily. Basically, you just make sure that this one matches the interferometer, and that's fine.
Well, I realize that, but if the interferometer is changing size or something, is that an issue, or is that...
Yeah, that's a good question. Wow, but... okay, the phase delay is caused by the AOM. We observe it's about 20 pi. It's about 20 pi. So that means if the length of trips of the interferometer is within 1% or even lower, that's not a big problem. Because if the length of trips is within 1%, then maybe, say, 0.2 pi.
Okay.
And I think normally it's way below that level, in order 10.5 or so. Any more questions? Okay, so let's just announce the numerical simulation. Why do we need numerical simulation? Because before the experiment, we have to know how many bits are decoys and how many bits are signals. And also, we want to know what intensity of it, right? If shall we set it to 0.5 or 0.6 or 0.7? And finally, how long shall we perform the experiment? We don't want to take a random spot. We will perform a 500 kilometer and of course get nothing. So we better get some sense of how long we can perform the experiment. This can all be done in numerical simulation. For model, we think the laser source generate coherent states and the channel signal fiber, which can give whose transmissions can be well modeled by exponential function. And also the detector can be characterized as efficiency, error rate, and dark end rate. With this model, in principle, we can perform numerical simulation. Because the experimental outcomes, the gains, the qubits, are both functions of these parameters I've mentioned before. And if we arbitrarily say, OK, I want 70% to be decoys, 30% to be signal, which is apparently inefficient, but we can actually try it. And we say, OK, the intensity of them are, say, 0.5 and 0.1. And if we arbitrarily set some values of this, say, the 12 values, then we can calculate the key transmission rate. Well, then at a certain distance, we can try all possible combinations and find the combination that can give the maximum key transmission rate. By saying all possible combinations, of course, we cannot, because there are infinite many combinations. However, there are certain resolutions that you can set for your experimental setup. For example, if you want to say, OK, the average human number should be 0.1234. Probably you cannot set it to that accurate, but it doesn't make a lot of sense. So with the resolution limits you have, you can find the possible combinations and find the optimal one, and choose the experimental parameter according to those readouts. And here's a simulation readout of our setup, from which we can clearly see a few remarks. For one thing, apparently, without decoy, the system can be made secure only over 14 kilometers. And by introducing only one decoy state, it can go much farther to about 59 or 58. And if we use a vacuum output, it can go even farther to about 68 kilometers. And the theoretical limits of the system is about 84 kilometers. Well, for one thing, of course, the decoy state improves the performance of QBD significantly compared to massive ones.
And also, we can see, okay, weak foot vacuum product is better than 1D5 product as we expected. And some of you might have a question, why? As I said, weak foot vacuum can give the same performance as the ideal decoy, infinite many decoy states. But why there is still an obvious gap between the two? This is simply because we're seeing the theoretical limit, that's in the case of infinite lambda size. So we do not have to consider the statistical fluctuation. But when we are doing actual experiments, we can never do infinite lambda size because you have finite long lifetime. Yes?
Where in this picture with the perfect single focal source, is it the same blue curve as the infinite decoy?
Well, if you have a perfect single infinite source, well, these are always coherent states. But if you do have a single infinite source, I would expect the line to be similar as here, but it's just straight line. Okay. Well, in case you have a perfect.
Except that per pulse, you would get more. Is that?
Yeah, I think it would be higher than this. It's higher than this. And that's always depends on detector. If you also have a perfect detector, that has no dark.
Of course. Well, then we go forever, right? There's no kind of perfect.
Yeah, but the rate goes down.
The rate goes down, but it doesn't have the. When there's one exponential, there's another sharp drop.
Actually, this sharp drop is the result of the dark counts.
Right.
Yeah, because at this range, the key rate is similar to dark counts, so you cannot tell if it's a real key or it's a dark count. There's a sharp drop.
Yes.
If you have a single infinite source, it will be a linear perfect line. Okay, so let me go back. In our experiment, since we send 100 megabits in the experiment, so we have to consider statistical fluctuation because the value we get might be somehow deviated from the actual value. So we have to consider it. Actually, in our experiment, we consider 10 standard deviations. And that's why there is this standard gap here. Okay. Finally, I want to say something about some words by other people on this topic. When we report our work, we say, okay, people say, okay, let's do a bit. So several groups have working on that problem. The first experimental implementation is done by a Chinese group in the University of Science and Technology of China. They use polarization encoding. So they use four laser diodes as decoy states, and another four signal states, and another two for polarization compensation. And well, they have several advantages. Their advantage, for one thing, they do not need to worry about the length fluctuation. It's a one-way system, and they don't have to worry about the length. Another thing is they can acquire the real vacuum, because they do not modulate it. If they need intensity, they get that output from one of the laser dials. And if they want vacuum, they simply block everything. And nothing is output, so they can acquire real vacuum. Their experiment is done over 102 kilohertz. Another experiment is done by Los Alamos and NIST in the United States, only a few days later than this one. And their experiment is pretty unique because they used the transition edge detector, the superconductor-based detector. So they have very low backhand rate. They use phase coding, so they need some length phase compensation. Therefore, they use this motorized air gap to compensate that. Well, it's a bit misleading, let's say 202 kilometers here, because actually a large fraction of the fiber loop is in Alice locally. Actually, they did the experiment over around 100 kilometers. And a third one is done by the Tough Europe group in the United Kingdom. They are using the most conventional unidirectional QKD setups. There's nothing very fancy here. So there's two in the front here, some from here, and decode here. The only thing I want to mention here is that they use high-speed detector. Their detector can work at 7 megahertz. I think that's the fastest one I've seen so far for the in-gas based detectors.
Well, their experiments then were much shorter distance of 25 kilometers because their detector is pretty noisy. The dark chemistry is almost in the order of 10 minus 4. It's very noisy. Again, that's a price paid for higher detection frequencies. So as a summary, we did the first experimental implementations of D4-6-DB, and we have observed the dramatic performance improvement by only making very simple modifications on the commercial QVD system. So our final conclusion is, we believe the D4 method is ready for real-life application, and I hope we can benefit from it soon. And thank you.
Is there, in the final places, there's no way Alice, or is it Bob, I don't know, whoever's left in the picture, the laser anyway could be modulated to do the decoys, right? Because then you go both ways.
Well,
that'd be done.
Sorry, I got to get confused. I think we do the decoy in final places. So
no, what I'm saying is if you didn't want to use the AOM, but if you wanted to change the laser power, you would have to do that on Bob's side, right?
Yeah, right.
Not do it on Ellis's side, and then bounce it back. But what if you did a two-way, you do a two-way decoy, so you modulate the laser, Bob?
No, you cannot. If you wanted the laser on
Bob's there.
Yeah, the eavesdropper can know it. Because the eavesdropper can just intercept the
Bob
strong signal.
Modulate. Well, I don't know. And then I have another question.
Mm-hmm.
So you said, and you're right, it's difficult to make single photon sources, or at least, you know, it might be relatively easy to make a single photon source which has a G2 of, say, 10% and zero. So it might have a two photon component of 10%, that's some factor, I guess, 10% of
mm-hmm.
bosonium.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had such a single photon source available, could you use decoy states to improve?
I think so. Because in this way, basically the certain number does not apply to Poisson distribution, but some other distribution.
Right.
In that way, you can still use decoy state to find out the fraction of single photons in the thickness and extract the heat. I think it's doable.
Yeah, but then you would have to either problem you have to make sure that the signal from decoying whatever you're using, again, in frequency, whatever, is undistinguishable if you think about using a second source.
I'm saying in that case, a simple decoy could just be vacuum, right? You don't excite your single photon source.
Yeah, that's
so anything else would be difficult. It's getting different. Well, it's not correct. Some of the single photon sources depends on how much, how you excite them. You might get different D2. Zero, so you could have different distributions.
Can you imagine you put simply a penny half the single photon source?
Yeah, exactly.
So that'd be an interesting question. Because in practice, we'll have you take some photons and have, I mean, on the very, very big ones, you'll have 0.01, which is pulses. Basically nothing. I don't know how to address it for very long distances. But if you have something like that, you take the diamonds, you know, the NV centers in diamond, we might have substantial background in the two-photon component.
Yeah.
Perhaps you can still be better, because that's a relatively simple single-photon source, and you might be able to do better than just same lasers and decoy states.
Possible. Maybe we can look into the
problem. Because of that, that's the problem with what's the total efficiency of those sources. Because, I mean, this decoy state, you go with mean photon numbers, basically, you can go around order one.
Yeah.
Right.
So that basically, and then if your single photon source has a very, very low single photon efficiency,
oh, of course.
Then you have already tried to catch up.
Yeah. No, obviously, it would have to have the same mu as a faint laser in that case too.
There's so no, but this is the decoy state. At the end of the day, you can use whatever photon number one. So you
have
to get always.
No, that's
same thinking.
Yeah. still big.
Orweb is big. Orweb is only big.
Big.
Compared to 10 to the minus.
Yeah, so this Faraday mirror system gives kind of Eve two chances at the beam. So is there a security proof?
As a bidirectional system?
Yeah.
I'm not aware of such secret code available so far, I think so.
Well,
yeah.
Guess it came of secret proof in one of two sense.
Moment, no, this is a idea what he says that if you're timing it for Sony, they're all the front offices.
Yeah,
but there's no further claim beyond that.
Yeah, there's no method
of the office before. They just show that it comes out. But still, it's important to see plug and play. If there's strong attenuation, so what attenuation would you use in that system here?
Let me try to memorize.
What was the claim that if Eve puts in some badly, some very strange light, and it goes through the attenuator, what comes out is still Bosonian?
Yeah, but basically, what Alice is doing, Alice gets a strong signal from Bob. And then attenuates, and then basically guarantee that it's Poissonian.
No matter what.
Yeah, okay. But Poissonian, that means always in whatever distance you really want to take. And so therefore it's not clear. It's only saying it's going to work Poissonian in the limit of infinite attenuation, but that's not good enough for a security move. Yeah.
You
need a bit more handle on that. But therefore it's important to support the attenuation.
I think the attenuation is about, so that's 60 to 70 dB, I think.
60 to 70 dB.
Right.
But that means you go in with a very strong signal pulse.
Right. So the meter generated by Bob, if we measure here, is about minus 25 dB.
dBm.
Then it goes to Alice, and here is maybe minus 30 something dBm. And what it output from Alice is in the order of minus 90 or so. Because minus 91 dBm is equivalent to be 0.1, but it's equivalent to 1. So it's about 60 dB.
How does that change if you really try to go to longer and longer distance? The system basically comes to its limit because of those methods, isn't it? If I really try to go to longer and longer distances, then I basically have to increase the signal intensity on Bob's side.
Yeah. Right.
More and more until I'm at some point probably going out of fiber or the radio backscattering, you probably have at that level already quite a lot. So you probably did you use this thing about sending batches of parts with storage fiber on Alice's side?
Here's a story in mind. That's about a train by train that signal is sent. Well, as for the longer distance, actually, that's true. We may need higher laser. However, I think it's not a big problem because there is another attenuator here, which gives us some flexibility of changing the internal attenuation in hours.
But you're not allowed to basically make this attenuation very small. You always have to keep
it. That's true.
High level. And if you now add up, basically go twice to the fiber plus this mandatory attenuation on this side, that tells you basically what is the input power that you have to go in.
Yeah, that's true. So,
I mean, at what point, actually, first of all, at what point do we run out of good, simple laser sources? And that basically there's a limit.
Well,
you just want to use simple laser lights and not something bigger. And the other thing is, at some point, some nonlinear effects come into the game that mess up things even more than just the radio backscatter. So just to know, basically, how far can you drive that system before something else starts to warm?
Well, so far, for our system, what we can see is because we can only go
60.
60, 70 kilometer, that's the limit of the system, right? The key will hit zero at that limit.
Yeah.
So.
Theoretical extrapolation at some point. Better detectors and so on, and then my calculation tells me now I can go to 160 kilometers. And should I believe that I can do that with this kind of plug play system, or would I run then into?
Let me see.
What is the pulse width?
Pulse width is about 500 picoseconds.
500 picoseconds.
Right.
So I think at that pulse width, you can still create power quite a bit. It's a say rectangular pulse.
Yeah.
before you see nonlinear.
And that though, if you think that it's not strong enough, maybe you can use the amplifier, the urban dose.
There's
five amplifier.
Yeah.
I think in that case, again, it amplifies to about 30 dB.
On the way there.
Yeah, and Ellis is, when it goes into Ellis, you put an amplifier.
Yeah, because there's no signal. But it doesn't introduce any other noise because they have an amplifier in the Marcello.
No, it will introduce phase noise if it has very
yeah.
amplification.
Yeah. Yeah.
So your plug and play auto compensation will get weaker.
Oh, but I got confused. What can we do the amplifier to?
Oh, no, that would be for laser power, right? But we're thinking, could you reduce the power going from Bob to Ellis?
Oh. Okay, so to avoid those nonlinear effects.
Right.
Okay. And the other thing you could probably do is a kind of these kind of phase reloading thing. Yeah.
Very good one.
So basically, you get the only thing you want to transfer is actually these. No, you don't want to do that.
But on the other hand, nonlinear effects might not be very severe. It's really secure in the first place, right? You couldn't produce. Could do whatever the nonlinear effects.
Yeah, it would be not about security, but the
error
of it to be seen. So I'm not worried about introducing or blowing up the system.
Wow.
That's expensive.
Cool.
Yeah.
More questions? Not on the next speaker again.